This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Suzanne Morphew's bones may have told the story prosecutors say her husband tried to bury. When forensic investigators tested her remains in 2024, they found something they weren't expecting. A cocktail of drugs called BAM. Bupropofol, Azapirine, and a methamidine. It's a tranquilizer mixture used to sedate large animals, specifically deer. And when investigators pulled the prescription records for that entire region of Colorado, they found something kind of remarkable. Between 2017 and 2020, according to the indictment, only one private citizen living anywhere near where Suzanne lived or where her body was found had ever purchased BAM. Barry Morphew, her husband, the man who had told investigators their marriage was the best, the man who posted a tearful video pleading for her safe return, the man who, according to prosecutors, admitted using that exact tranquilizer on a deer in their property just 1 month before Suzanne vanished. Looks a little sus, right? Well, on Monday, Barry Morphew stood in an Alamosa County courtroom and pled not guilty to first-degree murder. Again, this is the second time he's faced these charges. The first prosecution collapsed in spectacular fashion in 2022. And we're going to get into exactly why here in just a few. But first, you need to understand how Suzanne Morphew was found, because it wasn't through any brilliant detective work. In September of 23, investigators of the Colorado Bureau of Investigation were searching a remote area near the town of Moffat for a completely different missing woman. They weren't looking for Suzanne. They'd largely stopped looking for Suzanne. And then they found her in a shallow, clandestine grave less than an hour south of her home in Chaffee County, 3 years and 4 months after she disappeared on Mother's Day of 2020. According to a forensic anthropologist cited in the indictment, her remains had likely been moved at least once before ending up in that location. The condition of her body and her clothing suggested decomposition had occurred somewhere else first. Prosecutors allege someone relocated her, someone who apparently thought that spot was remote enough that she'd never be found. They were almost right. When Suzanne was reported missing on May 10th of 2020, the initial story was that she'd gone for a bike ride and never came home. Her mountain bike was found tossed into a ravine, but investigators noted there were no signs of an actual crash. Her helmet turned up days later, 8 miles away, undamaged, with a piece of paper inside containing her name and emergency contacts. None of it added up to an accident. None of it added up to voluntary disappearance. And from very early on, investigators focused on Barry. This is not odd. If your spouse goes missing, they're going to look at you. Doesn't mean you did it, but that's just the natural path of an investigation. They gotta eliminate people. And they're going to look there first, because the odds are there that there's a good chance somebody very close to the victim had something to do with their demise. Here's the part that makes this case so difficult to shake. According to the probable cause statement in the indictment, Barry Morphew was the last known person to see Suzanne alive. He told investigators he left their home early on the morning of May 10th to drive to a job site in Broomfield, about 2.5 hours away. He said the night before had been perfect. Stakes, intimacy, a romantic evening. But the evidence tells a very different story. And we're going to get into all of that right now. Before we do, though, if you're not done so already, please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to us. And as we go through this, your thoughts, let's continue this conversation off the air in the comment section, either on YouTube, Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski is where you can find us to have the conversation there, or our Substack page. Come join us over there. It's new. It's free. You get everything ad-free and in advance of our general releases to everyone else. So some perks there right now. But please do come join us over on our Substack to have a conversation there. Either way, YouTube or Substack, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts. So we'll continue there. But continuing here right now, 4 days before Suzanne vanished, she sent Barry a text message. Investigators found it screenshotted on his phone. It read, "I'm done. I could care less what you're up to and have been for years. We just need to figure this out civilly." That's not a woman describing a perfect marriage. It's a woman wanting out. And she'd been trying to get out for a while, according to testimony and documents from the first prosecution. Suzanne had confided in close friends that she was unhappy and that she wanted a divorce, that Barry was allegedly emotionally and physically abusive. She described him as Jekyll and Hyde. In messages to her friend, Sheila Oliver, she told her sister she'd been abrasive and harsh, or he'd been abrasive and harsh, according to testimony presented at the preliminary hearing. She described an incident in 2018 where Barry allegedly pushed her into a closet and held a gun to his own head, asking if that's what she wanted. She told friends she didn't feel safe alone with him. But Suzanne had a secret, too. For 2 years before she disappeared, she'd been having an affair with a man named Jeff Lieber, someone she and Barry had both known from their high school days in Indiana. Suzanne had reached out to him on Facebook in 2018 with a simple message, "Howdy, stranger." From there, it escalated. Hundreds of hours of phone calls, encrypted messages on WhatsApp and LinkedIn. They met up at least 6 times, New Orleans, Michigan, Texas, Indiana, Florida. They called each other soulmates. They talked about getting married once Suzanne left Barry. They even discussed moving to Ecuador together. Suzanne hid this relationship so well, it took the FBI agent 6 months to identify who Jeff even was. She allegedly never told a single person about him. She used apps specifically designed to avoid detection. And ironically, investigators only discovered the affair because Suzanne had bought a spy pen, a recording device, because she suspected Barry of cheating. He wasn't. But the pen captured her own conversations with Lieber. On May 9th of 2020, the day before Suzanne was reported missing, she and Jeff exchanged 59 messages, far more than usual. At some point that afternoon, while Barry was briefly away, she sent Jeff a selfie of herself sunbathing in their yard. Investigators have called it her last proof of life photo. She stopped responding to Jeff's messages at 2:44 p.m. According to the prosecution's theory, that's around the time Barry returned home. His phone records allegedly showed him moving rapidly around the house. 3 minutes later, his phone went into airplane mode, and it stayed off for about 8 hours. Jeff Lieber was cleared, almost immediately. He was in Michigan that weekend, worked on a dock project. Credit card receipts and store surveillance confirmed his alibi. On May 10th, he texted Suzanne to wish her a happy Mother's Day. She never responded. He texted again the next day, wishing her well for her cancer treatment, and nothing. He never heard from her again. So if Lieber didn't do it and Suzanne didn't run off voluntarily, what happened? Well, the prosecution's theory, both in 2021 and now, centers on Barry discovering that Suzanne was done, that she wanted out, Whether or not he knew about the affair specifically, he knew she was pulling away. According to the affidavit from the first case, Barry had taken steps to figure out if Suzanne was seeing someone. He'd allegedly stalked her at their own residence. He'd taken her phone. He'd accused her of having a boyfriend just days before she vanished. And then, prosecutors allege, on May 9th, with their daughters away on a camping trip, Barry used a tranquilizer dart to incapacitate his wife. Investigators found a small plastic cap in the family's dryer, the kind used on, you know, syringes that load tranquilizer darts. Barry admitted he knew how to use such darts. He'd been a deer farmer in Indiana before moving to Colorado. I didn't know that was even a thing. You could be a deer farmer. Okay. He had the expertise. He had drugs. He had, according to the indictment, and he was the only private citizen in that part of the state who did. Doesn't look great when you're the only person in that part of the state that happens to have the tranquilizer dart concoction, bam, and they find it in your deceased wife's bones 3 years after she's dead. On paper, the first prosecution had a lot to work with. But they screwed it up anyway. Literally. I mean, it imploded in spectacular fashion. DA Linda Stanley charged Barry in May of 21. And by April of 22, 9 days before trial was to begin, she filed a motion to dismiss. Not because the evidence was weak, but because her office had so thoroughly bungled the case that the judge had sanctioned them into oblivion. Stanley's team missed discovery deadlines repeatedly. They failed to turn over potentially exculpatory evidence to the defense, including the fact that unknown male DNA was found in Suzanne's SUV, partially matching samples from three unsolved sexual assault cases across the country. That DNA didn't match Barry. It didn't match Jeff Lieber either, and the defense was never told about it in time. Kind of important. Kind of important if there's partial DNA matches to people who've committed SA on other people and they're in the system. People have affairs all the time. People, unfortunately, also do get murdered all the time, too. And it doesn't always mean that it's necessarily the spouse. Sometimes it is transient type monsters that go from place to place. Why was that DNA in her car? She buddies with someone that she didn't know did this. There's people like that too, where no one knows who's done what in their past. The only direction that can take us down one of these roads half the time is the DNA. And it's not like somebody's carrying the DNA card around going, oh, by the way, look, I got a match over here in another state from 1994. They figured out that I did this to that person. I mean, something like that. I mean, that's not how that works. So it certainly raises questions that, yes, it's part of discovery. You have to turn over. And they didn't. The judge barred 14 of the prosecution's expert witnesses as punishment. DNA experts, vehicle data analysts, cell phone specialists, the people who were supposed to explain the digital forensics that underpinned the entire case, just gone. Stanley's response was to file for dismissal, citing the need for more investigation and the belief that they were close to finding the body. But she also launched what investigators later described as a baseless, retaliatory investigation into the judge himself based on conspiracy theories circulating online. She appeared on a YouTube crime show called Profiling Evil while the case was active, making comments that a disciplinary board later found were prejudicial to the defendant. In September of 24, Linda Stanley was then disbarred. Like, career gone. The Colorado Supreme Court upheld that disbarment in September of 25 by a vote of 4-2. The ruling cited her dereliction of duty and said the legal profession could not rely on her sense of integrity, probity, or righteousness. She became, as far as anyone can tell, the first sitting district attorney in Colorado history to be disbarred without resigning first. And here's what that means for this case. The first prosecution didn't fail because the evidence was weak. It failed because the DA's office couldn't follow the rules. Now there's a second chance. A different DA, Ann Kelly, from the 12th Judicial District, secured a grand jury indictment in June of 25. One count of first-degree murder, Barry was arrested in Arizona and extradited back to Colorado. He posted a $3 million bond in September and is currently under house arrest with an ankle monitor. Just the other day, he stood before Judge Amanda Hopkins in Alamosa, Colorado, and entered a not guilty plea. His attorney waived the right to a speedy trial, citing the massive volume of evidence that needs to be reviewed. Trial now set for October 13th of 2026. It's expected to last 6 weeks. Trick or treat. That's what we have coming up around Halloween this year. The question is now whether the prosecution can do what the last one couldn't. Connect the dots without tripping over its own feet. There's no confession. There's no eyewitness. There's no murder weapon in the traditional sense. What there is, according to prosecutors, is a woman who wanted to leave her husband, a husband who had excessive or exclusive access to a rare animal tranquilizer and an autopsy that found that exact tranquilizer in her bones. There's a text message that says, "I'm done," 4 days before she stopped existing. There's a phone that went dark for 8 hours on the day she vanished. There's a body that prosecutors say was moved, hidden, and only found by accident 3 years later. Barry Morphew says he's innocent. His attorney says the government has tunnel vision and that the outcome of this case will be the same as the first. Maybe. But the first case never went to a jury. This one might. Suzanne Morphew was a mother of two. She battled cancer. She dreamed of a different life. She told the man she loved, the one who wasn't her husband, that she wanted to be wrapped up with him, where they both belonged. She never got there. She never got anywhere. She ended up in a shallow grave in the San Luis Valley, with animal tranquilizer in her bones and a husband who maintains he had nothing to do with it. October is going to tell us if 12 people believe him. What about right now? What do you believe? I'd love to get your thoughts. Let's continue our conversation, shall we? In the comment section, YouTube, you can do it there. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, weigh in there if you're not already. Or on our Substack, interact directly with me on our Substack. The link is in the description. It's on your screen if you're watching us on YouTube. It's hiddenkillers.substack.com. It's absolutely free right now to join us as well. No paywall. Come on over and be part of our exclusive private group over there. And weigh in on the conversation. Let's continue that over there, okay? If you're on Apple Podcasts, might I ask, leave us a review. It helps us tremendously in the rankings. If you're following our reporting and finding it valuable, we do greatly appreciate that. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi is where you'll find us. I'll see you in the comments. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.